afternoon. This is Francis, your volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, bringing you our Listener Beware program. For the next half hour, you'll hear about scams, schemes, fraud, and ways to protect yourself and your money. First up is an article from the AARP Bulletin, December 2023, from the Your Money section by Michelle Andrews. The risks of medical credit cards. Be on the lookout for unwelcome side effects. The next time you're at the doctor or dentist facing a bill you can't immediately pay off, don't be surprised if you're offered a medical credit card. These cards, and sometimes installment loans, issued expressly to cover healthcare costs, aren't new, but their use is growing. From 2018 to 2020, people used medical credit cards or loans to pay for nearly $23 billion in healthcare expenses, according to a May report by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, CFPB, a federal agency. CareCredit, a major medical credit card issuer, has more than 11.7 million cardholders, up from 4.4 million a decade ago. Despite their popularity, medical credit cards aren't necessarily the best tool for handling medical bills. The cards can leave you on the hook for more than you expect, and other payment options may offer better terms. It's in large part buyer beware, says John McNamara, Assistant Director of Consumer Credit, Payments and Deposits Markets at the CFPB, filling gaps and speeding payment. Medical credit cards are typically offered by financial institutions to pay for health services that people may not have insurance coverage for, such as dental, vision, and hearing care. Major players include CareCredit, part of Synchrony Financial, Wells Fargo Health Advantage, and Alpheon Credit. Increasingly, these cards are also marketed for regular medical services to help people fill financial gaps in their insurance plans, resulting from high deductibles and other out-of-pocket costs. Although you may sign up for the cards at the doctor's office, your doctor isn't the one who's lending you the money. Instead, the lender is a financial institution that has an agreement with your healthcare provider to do the credit approval, issue the card or loan, and take over managing your account. Healthcare providers like the cards because they'll get paid for their services quickly, reducing their paperwork and financial risk. Here's how one consulting firm explains the benefit to medical professionals. We know if we go to outside financing, there's going to be a fee, but we know collecting money over several months ourselves is much harder. By signing up more patients, providers may also get a break on the fees that these financial firms charge them, according to the CFPB. Big charges and other dangers. Unfortunately, medical credit cards have pitfalls that may make them better deals for your healthcare provider than for you. One key issue is how interest, which can easily exceed 25%, is charged. Medical credit cards often promise zero interest for a certain period of time after you've used them to borrow. If you can pay off the total amount within that time, say 6 months or a year, the cards can be a good deal, but if you can't, it's a different story. If you still have a balance after that introductory period ends, you may owe interest on the full original balance. Imagine you have 1 year to pay a $2,000 dental bill at 0% interest. At year's end, if you've repaid all but $100 of that amount, you could owe 25% interest on the original bill, or $500. It takes advantage of consumer optimism, says Chi-Chi Wu, a senior attorney at the National Consumer Law Center who specializes in consumer credit. People think, I'll pay it off in a year, but often they don't because life happens. The CFPB report found that people paid $1 billion in deferred interest from 2018 to 2020, typically paying interest rates of 27%. In comparison, interest rates on conventional credit cards averaged 16%. Medical credit cards can be problematic in other ways, according to the CFPB and the U.S. PIRG Education Fund. Their easy availability might prevent you from seeking out smarter options. For example, you might qualify for financing programs that are significantly cheaper. And once you put the balance on a credit card, your provider has little incentive to correct inaccurate charges or see whether you qualify for financial assistance. Finally, you may lose out on favorable treatment of medical debt by the major consumer credit reporting agencies. In 2022, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion agreed not to put unpaid medical collection debt onto a consumer's credit report for a full year, giving patients time to work with doctors and insurers to resolve problems. In addition, medical collection debts under $500 and medical debt that has been paid off no longer appear on credit reports. But medical credit card debt may not get those protections. Lenders who aren't healthcare providers report your payment history and balances to the credit bureaus like any other credit card or installment loan, says a spokesperson for the Consumer Data Industry Association, a credit bureau trade group. Spokespeople for Wells Fargo and Synchrony confirm that their lending doesn't count as medical debt. Care Credit is a credit card, Synchrony explains. When a consumer pays for a product or service with a credit card, any resulting debt is credit card debt, not utility debt, restaurant debt, streaming service debt, or medical debt. That's also true for the AARP Essential Rewards MasterCard from Barclays, which offers 2% cash back on eligible medical expenses, but which, like medical credit cards, can be used for general purpose spending and isn't marketed through healthcare providers. Stressful decisions. If you're already stressed about the health problems that brought you to the doctor's office, you may not be in the best position to assess your financial options on the spot. Yet that's where medical credit cards are marketed. It's not only, you owe this, put it on your card, but I have the card for you, says Andrew Cohen, director and lead attorney of the Access to Care and Coverage Practice at the Boston-based law firm Health Law Advocates. The CFPB's McNamara says consumers assume that the health care provider will have their best interest at heart. That may be the case for medical care, but not necessarily for their financial care, he adds. Before you borrow, consider these precautions and alternatives. First, check your bill. Ask for an itemized version if you haven't received one already and check it for errors. You may be double charged for the same service or see a service listed that you didn't receive, warns the U.S. PIRG Education Fund. Talk to your provider and insurer if the changes look wrong. Seek assistance. Ask if you qualify for free discounted care through charitable assistance or other programs. Federal law, for example, requires all nonprofit hospitals to have financial assistance policies. Negotiate. One tactic suggested by USPIRG, ask what the Medicare rate is and request that lower charge instead. Explain that you are willing to pay but have limited resources. Get any agreed-upon discount in writing. And use your card cautiously. Once your bill is put on a credit card, medical or otherwise, you lose your opportunity to challenge it or negotiate a discount or payment plan. Next is another AARP Bulletin, December 2023 article from the Your Money section, entitled, Do I Really Have to Sign That? How to Be Smart About Contracts and Other Forms, by Nicole Pager. The receptionist at the doctor's office gives you a sheaf of papers to fill out. As the air conditioning repairman leaves, he hands you a contract. In a spa's waiting room, you're asked to sign an agreement before your Swedish massage. All this may be presented as routine paperwork, no big deal, but the consequences of filling out forms and signing your name could be very big indeed. You might be weakening your privacy, giving up legal rights, or agreeing to prices and charges you never dreamed you'd have to pay. So what should you do before taking pen in hand? When can you decline to sign? We tapped some legal professionals for their best tips. Understand the purpose. Knowing why someone is giving you a form to fill out can give you a better sense of how important it is and how attentive you should be. These are four categories of business paperwork you're likely to encounter. First, contracts. This is a binding agreement between two parties, usually involving an exchange of value. For example, you agree to pay a monthly fee to an auto dealership that will lease you an SUV in return. Both sides' responsibilities should be laid out in full. Second, liability waivers. Close behind in importance and often part of a contract, these limit or eliminate your ability to make the other party compensate you for any adverse outcomes from using its product or service. Third, disclosure forms. Once you sign, these acknowledge you've received certain information, usually legally mandated, such as an advisor's possible conflict of interest or your legal rights in particular transactions. And fourth, information forms. These are requests from businesses for info about you, ostensibly to serve you better. Examples include a health assessment from a doctor or a registration card for a new product. Prepare to face limited rights. Almost every contract you sign with a major corporation will require you to give up your right to sue in court. Instead, whether it's a nursing home, car dealer, or cell phone company, you'll have to submit to non-judicial binding arbitration. One big exception, mortgage lenders are prohibited from requiring arbitration. Contracts for companies big and small will also have clauses limiting their liability. It's only with a small business that you have any hope of modifying a contract, says Nancy B. Rappaport, a professor at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, Boyd School of Law. The more remote you are from dealing with an actual human who wrote the contract, the less likely it's negotiable, she says. Apple is not going to negotiate terms and conditions with me. Pat's Auto Repairs, maybe. To challenge liability limits after the fact, you'd have to go to court, where you might have to prove that the other party was guilty of gross negligence or willful misconduct. Laws vary by state. Give yourself time. A doctor's office will often send paperwork before your appointment to fill out ahead of time. Use the opportunity to review the terms and do the same with other contracts, Rappaport says. If you know you'll be making a big purchase, such as an automobile, ask for a copy of the contract to review ahead of time or to take home and look over before signing. Don't let a service representative rush you into signing a form while packing up. Take a seat and say you need time to review it. You want to make sure you understand what you're signing, Rappaport says. Get promises in writing. If something isn't written in the contract, it doesn't exist, Rappaport says. In fancy contracts, there's always a clause that says, this represents the entire agreement between the parties, she explains. This means all the stuff the salespeople tell you ahead of time is unenforceable unless it's in writing. Rappaport recently joined a gym and was told by the salesperson, you can back out of it within the first 30 days. But when she looked at the contract, it didn't say that. This, she says, is a situation in which you should ask to have specific language added to the contract, noting that a handwritten addition to the paperwork is fine as long as both parties initial it. Check that a contract reflects your agreement. If they've agreed to charge you $5,000 for roof repair, and you look at the contract and see $7,000, then you should not sign that contract, says Ira Reingold, executive director of the National Association of Consumer Advocates, also known as NACA. I can't tell you how many times someone said, I bought the car, I thought the interest rate was going to be 5%, and then I got to look at the paperwork and it was 8%. If you've received a contract ahead of time with an estimate and later are presented with the final paperwork, compare the two contracts. Hold up the pages to each other and make sure the first line and the last line match, Rappaport says. If something looks different, at least you know where to look. Don't sign what you don't understand. If you're stumped by the language in a document, ask for help, Rappaport says. The people who gave you the contract can't give you legal advice, but they can explain what a passage means, she says. If you're at a doctor's office, ask the receptionist, who will either have an answer or can refer you to an office manager or compliance expert for the further clarification, says Stephen Curley, a lawyer in Stamford, Connecticut. If there is nobody on site to answer your questions, tell the office you don't feel comfortable signing until staff can track the appropriate person down. Be stingy with information. If, as part of a contract or disclosure form, you're asked to provide information you'd rather not give out, say your social security number, phone number, or email address, feel free to challenge or simply ignore that. Unless a contract demands it, you likely have no legal responsibility to provide info a business or service provider wants. If on the fence, consider asking the business, why do you need this? Rappaport says. And know when to walk away. When should you not sign a contract? These are among the most common reasons according to those we interviewed. The terms aren't fair and aren't negotiable. The other party won't put into writing what was verbally agreed to. The contract includes something you did not agree to or weren't made aware of. There is ambiguous terminology that you can't get clarification on. If something doesn't feel right, you don't have to sign. Your common sense in your experience should dictate most of your actions, Curley says. And next we have an online article by Erica Lamberg from foxbusiness.com, published November 19, 2023. Paper check fraud is on the rise. What to know? While online banking and electronic payments are becoming more mainstream, many Americans still write paper checks, and there's been a resurgence of fraud. If you think you're immune because you pay bills online and don't write paper checks often, think again. Using a variety of sneaky scams, criminals can access your checking account information even without a physical check. The rise in sophisticated check fraud is a serious issue, and American Bankers Association is working collaboratively with our members and other stakeholders to implement innovative solutions that target the real problem. The bad actors preying on customers and the banks that serve them, Sarah Grano, an ABA spokesperson, told Fox Business. Working together as an industry alongside law enforcement, the Postal Service, and regulators offers us the best chances at success. Here's how to be better prepared to protect yourself. Why is paper check fraud on the rise? Over the last few years, there has been a notable uptick in the number of check fraud claims filed by customers. Even though fewer and fewer people are using paper checks every year, fraudsters have shown they prefer to attack this low-tech method of payment, says Joe Bernardo, global head of fraud and claim operations with Wells Fargo based in Columbus, Ohio. The Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, FinCEN, which is the U.S. Treasury's investigative arm, tracks fraud trends and statistics. Just this year, FinCEN issued an alert that check fraud has more than doubled over the past 3 years, Bernardo told Fox Business. It reported 680,000 cases of possible check fraud last year, up from 350,000 in 2021, a 23% increase over reports in 2020, he said. Compared to digital payment methods, in many ways, Bernardo said, paper check remain frozen in time. Credit cards and other forms of digital payment systems have been routinely updated and modified with security enhancements, providing an extra layer of protection that paper checks don't have, he added. What makes paper check users more vulnerable? Compared to other transactions that have become more secure, for example, the chip on your debit or credit card, the check has not really evolved, Bernardo said. The methods that scammers use to acquire a check can vary from stealing checks through normal day-to-day commerce, stealing check payments from the mail, or even obtaining customer credentials through phishing scams that may allow them to review check images online and create a counterfeit copy of a consumer's check, Bernardo explained. Fraudsters steal mail in search of paper checks. If fraudsters find a check, they will chemically wash the original ink off the check before altering the amount and the payee's name, he said. From there, they cash the check to steal money from the account. Another avenue for criminals to access your account involves obtaining a customer's bank routing and account number to create fake checks. Purchasing bank checks through an office supply store, the fraudster manufactures counterfeit checks with an actual customer's account information, giving them entry to steal money from that account, he added. Regardless of the situation, the criminal's goal is always the same, to get your money. Personal checks are subject to fraud. How can you better safeguard yourself? First, use a digital payment. Second, when writing a check, use non-erasable black gel ink, such as a permanent marker. Third, mail checks at the U.S. Post Office, not a mailbox. Review your account regularly. Review your accounts, statements, and your cash-to-check images on a regular basis. I absolutely recommend using your bank's mobile app so that you can monitor activity in real time, Bernardo said. If anything looks odd, if you see a transaction you didn't make, be sure to dispute it as soon as possible. He also noted it's wise to sign up for a daily balance transaction and balance alerts from your bank. By receiving the alerts, you're notified daily of your current account balance and transaction activity in real time. It's an easy, automatic way to keep track of your finances. For an added level of security, make sure your phone and email contact information is up to date on your bank's website. Many banks will use these challenges to quickly reach you when they spot concerning activity, he advised. And finally, here's a little bit of good news from the AARP Bulletin, December 2023 issue, in the news section. FTC seeks to ban hidden junk fees. The maddening charges that pad your bills and seem to come out of nowhere are finally being targeted by a federal proposal that would require full disclosure of so-called junk fees. These would include hotel bills with resort or destination fees, airline fees that used to be included for the ticket price, and handling charges piled on to concert and theater tickets. The FTC in October proposed a rule that would ban hidden fees and make it mandatory for businesses to disclose their all-in prices for hotel stays, concerts, and other events up front. The FTC estimates its proposed rule would save consumers more than 50 million hours per year of wasted time spent searching for the total price in live ticketing and short-term lodging alone, time savings equivalent to more than $10 billion over the next decade. Separately, the U.S. Department of Transportation proposed rules to make airlines refund checked bag fees or compensate for meals, hotels, and rebooking when flights are significantly delayed or when services such as Wi-Fi aren't provided. AARP canvassed social media users to ask which junk fees irritated them. Among fees named were charges to reserve an Uber ride, service fees at Airbnb, and fees tacked on to cable bills and rental car agreements and added to the tab at restaurants. Respondents frequently mentioned Ticketmaster, which has more than 80% of the market for major live concerts and professional sporting events. A final article by thegreenvalleynews.com, Problem Solved, Fraudulent Credit Card Charges Won't Drop Off Bill, by Christopher Elliott, November 1, 2023. Question: I need your help with several fraudulent charges on my Costco City card. I reported the charges as soon as I saw them. Citi locked the card and sent me a new one. But when I tried to activate the new card, I received a message that someone had already used the new card. I reported the problem to Citi. It locked the new card and sent me another one. The second card didn't work either. The third card worked, except that the charges for the $613 were still on the bill. My husband handled the dispute by phone, so there's no paper trail. We received a denial and immediately appealed. We have not heard back from Citi yet. We'd like to receive credit for the fraudulent charges. Can you help us? Jean Vall, Williamsburg, Virginia. Answer: the fraudulent charges were obviously not yours. Whoever stole your card went on a spending spree, ordering pay-per-view and takeout meals. A halfway skilled investigator could have figured out that these weren't your charges with a simple phone call or by looking at your previous spending patterns. It's far more likely that there was some kind of electronic hiccup when you asked for a replacement card, and I think I know what happened. I'll tell you in a minute. You did the right thing by disputing your credit card bill immediately. I outline the correct steps for a chargeback in my guide to credit card disputes. I also have executive contacts at Citibank that you could have used. So what went wrong? In your denial letter, Citi says, "We previously reached out to you regarding your disputes, but since we didn't receive the information we needed, we had to continue our investigation with the information we had available. Unfortunately, this information wasn't sufficient to resolve the dispute in your favor, and your dispute has been closed." But you did not receive any inquiry from Citi. You say you spoke with a bank several times by phone, but no one mentioned a problem with your dispute. City could have made a better effort to reach out to you and get the information it needed to complete your chargeback. If I had to guess, I would say it handed your dispute to an AI, which may have neglected to send you an email or letter asking for the additional information. It may have also been behind those non-working replacement cards. Why do I think it's an AI? If you've spent any amount of time talking to an AI, you know that it easily forgets facts that you give it. My advice, during a credit card dispute, keep all of your correspondence in writing. Don't do anything over the phone since there will be no written record of the conversation. I contacted Citi on your behalf. You finally received an email from the bank and provided it with the information it needed to process your refund. You received a full refund for the fraudulent purchases. And that wraps up our Listener Beware program for today. I hope you found this helpful. This is Frances at SunSounds. Have a great rest of your day. If you miss a program, you can get it on demand at sunsounds.org. Left click on Broadcast Info and Audio. Then, under Programming Links, left click on On Demand Podcasts. Also, you can now listen to SunSounds on your Echo Dot or other smart home device.